7.
Back to Shattering Myths as we turn our attention to the second hour. I would like to say one more thing that's a lingering thought from the first hour, and that is, since the Pope is has been approved to fly senior cardinals into Syria for discussions and to show his support, whose side do you think the Pope is on? If the Pope were with the rebels trying to overthrow Assad, do you think that those cardinals would be allowed to fly into Syria? No. The Pope is supportive of Assad. Now, he's supportive of the Assad regime because he knows that should the fundamentalist Muslims topple the Assad government, the Christians in that country will be killed. He's witnessed it happen in Syria, although they're not a lot. Excuse me, in Iraq, though there weren't a lot of Roman Catholics, and the Christian population was smaller. But the 2% of Iraqis that were Christians are no more. Once America invaded that country and toppled Saddam Hussein, they were decimated. Such is the nature of Islam. It's one of the aspects of Islam that Americans are just unwilling to acknowledge, that we are putting Christians in harm's way, just as we are in Egypt with the Copts, when we support the wrong side. Truth is, here, we ought not be supporting either side. Now, as we begin our review of Yah's testimony today, we were considering, in I think two or three programs in a row, the evidence that God provides to the fact that those who embrace his plan, his testimony, which he said that he provided long ago, that he has not changed, that he will never change, that he's made available to all people in every tongue of the world, and that that plan is the lone source of salvation. And he says those who rebel against it, who oppose it, will find themselves bowing down in judgment for having opposed him, that we've been reviewing this so that we understand that there are those who will bow down before God, but those who find themselves on their knees before God are being judged by him for having opposed him. Yes, Scott?
They would also find themselves exactly where they want to be.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, it's the very people, too, that will be on their knees before God are the very people who encouraged others to be on their knees. You know, the Pope wanted to be revered, wants people to bow down before him and kiss his ring. Well, he's going to find himself on his knees before God, but it will be in judgment.
But it's exactly where they want to be. They all want to be judged by him. They all, like, that's what they preach. That's exactly what they preach.
It's what they preach, but it's not what they want. They will have chosen their own fate. They will have dug their own grave. They will have willingly jumped in. They have chosen this fate, and they have perpetrated and brought it upon themselves. Their judgment will be ultimately fair. So, anyway, I wanted to complete the testimony that Yahweh had about this, because he's made it very clear. He's used Sadak in association with his Dabar word. Sadak is the Hebrew word whose primary meaning is to be upright, which is the antithesis, of course, of bowing. And God views that those his Torah instructions have made innocent as being upright. God got down on his knees to lift us up so that we could stand with him. And so that is the testimony that God has provided thus far. It concludes with the following statement. They are hooked and broken, and they are cut down together at the same time. He's talking now about those who have opposed him, the religious individuals. He says they are hooked and broken, which means they're incarcerated, if you will, and they're cut down, which means they are separated from him, together at the same time, and they are incapable of being saved. From the burden of this pronouncement, and their souls will walk into captivity. Those who advocate on behalf of religion are incapable of being saved. The victims of religion can be saved from religion, but the perpetrators of religion cannot be saved. They themselves are walking into captivity. They have no one to blame but themselves. When a person worships a false god, elevating the musings of Satan to the level of scriptures, as Christians are wont to do with Paul's epistles, and Muslims do with Muhammad's recital known as the Quran, they become hooked. They are separated from God. These religious zealots, when they begin to promote their poison, cannot be saved, even by God, especially by God, because they have chosen to believe the beast, Satan, over Yahweh. Now, one last thought before we move on. The word for captivity here is shabi. It is based on shabu. It is intriguing because it reveals that flashes of light led to the division that has caused this separation, ultimately the captivity. Paul described the visual implications associated with his encounter with Satan on the road to Damascus as flashing rays of light. In fact, the founder of the Christian religion, Shaul, Paul, described Satan's flashy appearance the exact same way Yosha described the adversary's fall from heaven. And so, by beguiling the faithful into believing that he had met with Yosha and not with Satan, Paul rendered billions of souls incapable of being saved, separating Christians from Yahusha, and thus Yahweh. Now we turn to this particular revelation, trying to understand who will stand upright in God's presence and who will bow down before him, because of a letter that was written by one of these beast-inspired individuals, an advocate of the Christian religion. He went on to reply to my second response to him with this line: I rejoice that Jesus will be the subject of discussion on your radio show. God will use your show for his glory, regardless of your twisted motivations to belittle the name of Jesus. Now, what I was going to do for you this morning was to report the history of the development of the name Jesus, so that the listeners to this program would know for absolutely certain that there was no justification for Jesus, that the name Jesus is man-made, it was conceived in the 17th century, and that it has absolutely no association of any kind with Yahweh or Yahusha. And that's what I was going to do this morning, as I began to search from prior research to provide you with that testimony, and I will do it in a future program. I stumbled upon something that I thought was even more useful and pertinent, and something we're going to discuss today, tomorrow, and maybe even for a couple of days next week. I have mentioned several times that the most overt condemnation of religion in the whole of Yah's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is a letter where Yahweh speaks in first person, and he does throw through a scribe named Yirmiyahu. It's been changed to Jeremiah, and that this letter, if you read the opening statements, was written to Gentiles, from people from different races and places. So it's an open letter from God to Gentiles regarding God's disdain for religion. And since I was scanning material to come up with the research to disprove every twisted motivation for the name Jesus and behind the name Jesus, this just seemed too relevant to pass up. So we're going to devote a number of shows to these statements in the heart of Yirmiyahu. It begins, "Woe to those acting as shepherds who have destroyed and who have scattered the flock from my shepherding and pasturing," prophetically declares Yahweh. Woe in Hebrew is oi, consider this a warning, is what it means. Those acting as shepherds, those in public office and those in religious office often refer to themselves as shepherds. If you look at the Pope, he carries a shepherd's staff, identifying himself as a shepherd. And God is saying, consider this a warning. Woe to those acting as shepherds who have actually destroyed. Avad is the Hebrew term here. We get the English word bad from it. Those who have ruined, those who have caused others to go astray, those who have caused death, those who have caused others to cease to exist, those who have caused things of great value to be squandered and wasted. And those who have scattered, poots is the Hebrew word, those who have chaotically and violently displaced the flock, my sheep, from my shepherding. By the way, the flock is Sion. Sion is very similar to Zion, which is in Hebrew Sion, and it means signs along the way. Prophetically declares Yahweh. This is God speaking in first person, and he is condemning those who are acting as shepherds, saying that those who are pretending to be shepherds, the Roman Catholic priesthood would be a glaring example, but so would to Protestant pastors, and so would civil servants, particularly presidents, because they have destroyed and scattered God's flock. So consequently, God says, this is from Lachan. So therefore, accordingly, this is what Yahweh, the God of Yisrael, as we know, Yisrael is a compound of Yish, the Hebrew word for individual, Sarah, which is the Hebrew word for strive and contend, engage and endure, persist and be set free and empowered by, and El, God. So this is what consequently, Yahweh, the God of those individuals who strive and contend with, engage and endure with, persist and are set free and are empowered by God, has to say concerning those acting as shepherds, those tending to and feeding the flock, you yourselves have led astray and scattered my family and thus my flock. You have compelled them and you have driven them away, and you are not concerned about them. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back to this passage in a moment. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. Scott and I have had quite the discussion during the break talking about this. And Scott's question was, he says, obviously these folks, these religious leaders are in a lot of trouble. And let's be honest, if you were to ask 1,000 people to identify who God's talking about here, people who are pretending to shepherd a flock, of those 1,000 people, 999 would say, oh, religious leaders. I mean, that's what he's talking about here, right? Those who claim to be shepherding the flock. You're talking about religious leaders. And what he said is, you know, wouldn't you just love to be in the room when these people are finally held accountable for this? Because God's obviously upset. And what I told Scott and I've shared with you is that we actually will be. One of the concluding comments that God makes in that Yashayahu Isaiah passage that we were considering these last couple of days, that those who are God's children, the upright, the tzedak, will stand in the presence of those who are now prostrate and bowing down, being judged. And there's every indication that we not only will be witnesses to this, but that we'll be able to testify against them. So this will be quite the spectacle. Now, continuing to speak about them, then God's now speaking to religious leaders. He says, so consequently, this is what Yahweh, the God of Yisrael, has to say concerning those acting as shepherds, those tending to and feeding the flock. You yourselves have led astray and scattered my family, and thus my flock. You have compelled them and driven them away. Nada is you have impelled, seduced, and enticed them. You have lured them and drawn them away from me, preying upon them. You have exerted enormous pressure and thereby thrust them aside, exiling and banishing them. You've made them outcasts, causing them to be cast down. And you have not shown any concern about them. So behold, I will hold you accountable for this wickedness, for the wickedness, the harmful and displeasing, the injurious and unethical, mischievous and evil nature of your deeds, prophetically declares Yahweh. So those who claim to be shepherding God's sheep, foremost amongst them will be the popes who carry the that shepherd staff. Foremost amongst them, God's going to hold them accountable for this wickedness, for misleading, for scattering, for harming his family. God's unequivocal about this. Now, the shepherds of Yisrael recognize that this was written to Goyim, not Yehudim. Goyim, not Jews, Gentiles. But nonetheless, the shepherds of Yisrael were kings and priests, so this indictment is directed at them, against the political and religious institutions and their rulers. Rather than guiding, protecting, and nurturing Yah's flock, concerned only with themselves, they became unethical, harmful, ruthless, wanton, and deceptive. But they are not alone. The same can be said and should be said of those who followed in their footsteps. Even today, religion and politics remain the root of most evil. They are the most deceptive, destructive, and deadly institutions on earth. But God's going to hold them all accountable. He's going to treat clerics and kings just as they have treated their victims. That's why Sheol, the place of separation, will be a very religious and political institution. It's going to be a prison filled with presidents, with priests, and with pastors. If you love your religion, you're going to love hell. Scott, do you have a comment?
I was going to say, isn't it going to pretty much be everybody that is religious? Because everybody, most religious people influence at least someone at some point in time, whether it's their kid or, you know, something like that.
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to this question, but I can tell you that there is nothing that God is more concerned about than parents misleading their children. It is the thing that he encourages us not to do. It is the thing that he warns us the consequence of doing more often than probably anything else. He begs us not to poison our children with religion. And so, yes, many do. And my sense, Scott, in studying Yah's testimony, that the victims of religion, even though they victimize their own children, aren't going to be the ones held accountable in this way. I think it's going to be primarily the perpetrators of religion, the shepherds, the leaders of religion and politics, who will suffer this fate. But there's a way to avoid it, and God told us that as well. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello, and welcome back to the last half hour of our program today. Scott and I were having a discussion again during the commercial break, and it's really over that same subject we ended the last segment on. God is saying that he's going to hold those who are acting as shepherds, who are actually misleading and fleecing the flock, devouring them, harming them, separating them from God. He's going to hold them accountable. And so the question really becomes, how far down the chain are those going to be held accountable for injuring God's children? And so at the very highest levels of religion, it's obvious. Those who formed religion, the Muhammads and the Pauls of the world, they're in real serious trouble. I mean, there's no wiggle room for them. God's made it very clear. But these are blanket indictments. They're not just against two individuals. They're against not just the Akibas Muhammadis of the world. They're blanket indictments against all of those acting as shepherds over God's people. And so it would include all religious leaders. Now, the question then becomes, what about their victims in the pews? Because those victims victimize their own children, encouraging their children to be poisoned by this same religious malfeasance, these hypocritical human schemes. And God is in a position where he can tell us for absolute certain what happens to those who choose to come to know him, choose to love him, choose to come to understand the terms of his covenant and embrace them. You get to live forever with God. Absolute promise. Totally unequivocal. He can also tell us precisely what's going to happen with religious leaders, these people acting as shepherds. They're going to be held accountable, which means they're going to be judged and condemned, which means they're going to spend their eternity in Sheol, the place of separation. What he could not tell us and does not tell us is how much wrong you have to advocate before you go from simply ceasing to exist at the end of your mortal life and being incarcerated in Sheol. He could not tell us that, because then people would have a tendency this is how wrong I can be, as opposed to recognizing there's a wonderful opportunity to become part of God's family, and there is a consequence of leading people away from him. You want to avoid those two things, but everything in the middle is not a punishment. You just simply cease to exist. But I think that's why there's a trial at the end of the age, is that God's going to determine who crossed the line and is going to be held accountable in this way. And certainly it's going to be every religious leader. Yes, Scott?
I was just going to make a comment about the, he's going to take it case by case. Because if he just told us right away, this is, you have to go this far before you're in big, big trouble. It'd be like telling your kid they have to be home by 10 o'clock. The kid doesn't show up at, 8 p.m. He stays out until 10 o'clock,
Doing things that are, in many cases, counterproductive. Yeah. And that's what this is. God can't say, you can mislead people so long as you only mislead three people and they're members of your family before I'm going to hold you accountable. That would be absurd. And so we don't typically find God being absurd. And therefore, he's told us emphatically, the leaders of religions are those pretending to act as shepherds who are actually misleading their flock. They're in trouble.
I would think he'd actually be harder on somebody that only misled their family, because he cares so much about it. That's supposed to be that protected space.
Yes, but most parents mislead their children. The vast preponderance of parents mislead their children.
I understand. And, I mean, obviously I was very lucky to have the parents I've had. I think that because that's one of the things that he warns against a lot is don't poison your children. And that is something that is directly there. That is something that he says do not do. So right. I think he'd be harder on that, on somebody that only poisons their family.
Yeah. But most people poison their family because of these people who put on the fancy robes and speak from the fancy pulpits and the fancy cathedrals, claiming to speak on behalf of God. And so, for certain, we know that God has just revealed one of life's greatest ironies. Religious establishments, Scott, which claim, as you know, to providing access to God, are actually driving people away from God. That's what God just said. Yeah. And the political institutions which claim to be concerned about their people, to be engaged in leading, feeding, and protecting them, are actually exploiting the masses for their own political gain. Just listen to the debates in America over these last few weeks.
I also think that if you see people in that are super religious, they don't seem like the happiest people.
No.
They really don't.
No, they're pretending.
It seems like they're always worried about something, you know. They're worried about being judged. They're worried about, you know, is this what my God wants me to do? Things like that. They always seem to have something else on their mind, and they never seem to be truly happy.
You know, when I was overtly religious, I recall how hard we all worked to prove how the depth of our faith. We all wanted to create this aura that our faith was absolute and unshakable. Now, if it was faith was absolute and unshakable, it wouldn't be faith anymore. It would be knowing. But regardless of that, the other thing we wanted to do is to prove that we, in public prayers, that we could, because of our status, that we could give the best public prayer. It was all for show, and it was all hollow. And you realize that, yeah, I was doing it, but so was everybody else that I was associated with. We're all putting on airs to try to impress one another. And it was hollow.
Very much so. And I have a question for you.
Sure.
Obviously, you were, like you said, you were, you know, pretty religious. And
yes, I was.
You had a strong standing in the Catholic Church.
No, it wasn't. It was the Presbyterian Church.
Yep. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm sorry too. I wish Presbyterian Church is probably as overtly evil as the Roman Catholic Church. So, I'm sorry that I did that.
So after obviously that the foundation that you had built there began to crumble.
Yeah.
Something drove you to continue searching for Yah, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was it that pushed you to it? I mean, did you just have that the void that was left by, you know, what you thought that you had to fill, or what brought you there?
A combination of things. First, I walked away from the church because I saw the hypocrisy and because. There were so many religious positions that just made absolutely no sense. It was obvious that my religion wasn't true. And I looked at the history of Christmas and Easter. I looked at Sunday worship. I looked at the Trinity. I compared Christianity to the Babylonian myths. And then I looked at all the contradictions that exist, particularly in Paul's writings. And I was, wow, this isn't true. And I saw the hypocrisy and the hollowness of it, which drove me away from it. And I became, for a while, kind of a closet agnostic. Mm-hmm. But then there was this nagging realization that the things that the other side was saying, the secular humanists, they just weren't true. That they were as full of lies and hypocrisies. This notion that life spontaneously came to exist, and that our universe was created but didn't have a creator. That that all of this order that we see just is happenstance, and that was so obviously untrue as well. That I said, you know, somewhere along the lines, there's got to be truth. The thing that actually resonated with me was when I began to translate the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And I was motivated to do so because I found that our translations were not remotely accurate. I looked at things and said, that can't be true. That is inconsistent. Therefore, it would disprove the whole of God's testimony. And so I began to investigate Hebrew and found that all of my issues with God were actually issues that were contrived by man, either through erroneous translations or through religious teachings which don't have any standing with God. And so over time, as I was able to demonstrate to myself that all of my issues with God were actually issues with religion, and that God hated religion, he became more and more knowable. He became more and more credible. And the more I studied, the more I came to like the God who was revealing himself through this testimony. So I found God in the one place that he told us we could find him, in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Okay. That's just something that I wanted to ask you for a while. So.
Yeah, I found that religion was untrue, and any rational evaluation of the claims of Christianity demonstrate that its central planks are invalid. They are inconsistent with the very God's testimony they claimed is responsible for the religion. It is impossible to be an informed and rational Christian. And so when you reach the point where you're willing to question your religion, your faith will disappear because it cannot stand up to questioning. God is overtly anti-religious. Then the question is, are you just going to say, well, since religions are all wrong, is therefore God wrong? Which is basically the approach of the atheist, the socialist secular humanist. When they attack God, they aren't attacking him, they're attacking religion. And religions are easy to defeat. So the question for all of us is, once we come to know that religion is unreliable, are we still interested in knowing whether or not there actually is a God who is reliable? And if you're willing to invest the time, there's only one place you can turn to find him, and that's his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That's what I did. That's how I came to know him.
It all comes down to one question for me.
Yeah.
And it's, would you rather, do you want to believe or do you want to know?
And yeah, I found that belief was pretty hollow for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can believe in God, but wouldn't it be better to know God?
You know, it's like the question we had at the end of the program, two programs ago. The individual said, do you believe in the inerrant, that the Bible is the inerrant word of God? Do you believe that it is the inerrant word of God? No, I don't believe. I no longer have to believe. And, of course, the evidence says that it's not inerrant. The Bible isn't. And so, therefore, you can replace belief with knowing, and knowing is so much more satisfying. I'm Yada. This is Shatter. Back to the final segment of Shattering Myths this morning. I am Yada, your host. Through this passage, God has put us on notice that religious and political rulers are not only hypocrites whose enticing rhetoric is the antithesis of their actual agenda, but also in mind, heart, and soul, they are wicked, harmful, injurious, unethical, and downright evil. It's quite an irony, isn't it? The people who claim to be the epitome of good are the most rotten from God's perspective. We're fortunate to have Jason from Toronto on the line. He wanted to join in this discussion. Hello, Jason.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I'm joining the conversation today. Yeah, I just wanted to, I had a funny story, but first I would say that, you know, it's not, necessarily we have to learn, like, every single corruption out there. I mean, I enjoy doing that, but I think as far as the problem with being religious and whatnot is more valuing the truth over what you believe.
Yes,
I think if you value the truth above what you prefer or what you believe, then you know you got the right attitude to be free from. Religion and deception.
Yeah, an affinity for the truth, a love for the truth, even when the truth impugns that which you've held dear, is really the path that will get you to the right place. I wrote a book called Questioning Paul, and I began to write the book to demonstrate that Paul had been mistranslated, that he'd been misquoted, that he'd been misunderstood, and that really Paul was not hostile to the Torah. That was my perspective then. And what I found is that the truth was the antithesis of what I believed. And when you find the truth is contrary to what you've held dear, what you have believed, then the question that we're all faced are you going to embrace the truth and step away from the misconception, or are you going to continue to cling to the misconception because you don't like what the truth has to say? And the questioning Paul, I started all over from the beginning. When I read evidence that proved that Paul was a false prophet, I chose to embrace the truth. And by embracing the truth, I came to recognize that he was a false prophet. And ultimately, it was the most liberating, most freeing, most kind of enlightening experience that I'd gone through. Rejecting a lie is a really enjoyable thing when you come to know how much more powerful and revealing and beneficial the truth is.
Yeah, that's right. I think once you sort of you experience that, it's pretty encouraging to keep moving forward. You know, whatever obstacles you come across, I think the motivation is there to continue to learn more and free yourself from deceptions.
That's the conversation I had with Scott during the last commercial break, was that once I got into Yah's Torah, his prophets and Psalms, and began to scrutinize each word and view entire conversations as a singular whole, and how all the pieces fit together, it was impossible not to fall in love with the message that was being conveyed. And each time you would try to find a flaw in it, the deeper you dug, the more verifying and corroborating the evidence was. And so you quickly come to a place, Jason, where the lies of my youth were shed, and where the light got brighter and brighter and brighter, and you transition from faith and belief, which you discard along the way, to knowing, and then somewhere there's something happens to you if you spend the time where there's something vastly better than knowing, and that's understanding. You come to know enough and think about it, and you put the pieces together, you transition to a place that is vastly better than knowing, and that's understanding. And ultimately, by doing this, you and I have come to understand the mind, the purpose, and the offer that God has made. And when you understand what his purpose is, what his plan is, that passage in Yahshua, he was speaking of his plan. When you come to understand his plan, that's a very, very exciting place to be. We'll continue this discussion this time tomorrow. Jason, please call us back. We've come to the end of our program today. But thank you all for listening to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada.
Over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.